Weight loss drugs, originally developed to tackle diseases like diabetes, have been hailed as the breakthrough medical miracle of the decade. And that miracle stretches beyond human health because, as one of Ireland's budget watchdogs said last week, our corporation tax returns might be protected due to the huge success of these drugs. So brands like Ozempic and Mounjaro, produced here, aren't just changing waistlines, they're bulging Ireland's tax receipts too. It's News Talk Daily, I'm Shane Beattie. Sales of weight loss and diabetes medications have exploded, up more than 80% in the US alone this year, and that's had a ripple effect here. Almost all of the €40 billion jump in Irish pharma exports this year was down to one thing, the active ingredients for those same drugs made right here in Cork and Athlone. The Fiscal Advisory Council says this could help shield Ireland's finances from US tariffs. But today's podcast isn't really about the economics of weight loss. It's about health, culture, and stigma. And I have a very personal reason for discussing it too. Many people swear by these medicines, but others warn it risks creating a new kind of dependency on the drugs themselves without any change to lifestyle. Joining me on the podcast today are Dr. Mick Crotty from the Irish Society for Clinical Nutrition and Metabolism. Mick is also clinical lead for obesity at the Irish College of GPs, and also community pharmacist Sheena Mitchell, who hosts the Wonder Care podcast. Mick and Sheena, you're both very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Mick, I'll start with you first. This Fiscal Council report puts these drugs in an unusual spotlight, I suppose, not just as treatments, but actually as a driver of Ireland's tax revenue. So I'm just wondering, from your point of view, what is behind this incredible boom in weight loss medication?
I suppose if we're talking about obesity medications rather than weight loss medications, these are treatments that will improve people's health, their metabolic health, their physical function, their quality of life. They are not simply for weight loss. They are to treat somebody who's got a medical condition. And I suppose this is a condition that has been misunderstood in the past as an issue of willpower motivation. We now know it's much more complicated. It's genetically linked, it's biologically regulated, and it's environmentally influenced. People don't have an issue with willpower motivation. It's not lack of personal responsibility. It's more complicated. And for the first time ever, we have treatments now that are available in the community that are incredibly effective to treat this medical condition. So I suppose that's where the excitement for many people is coming from. Previously, you know, the amount of health improvement we would see with treatment would only come with bariatric surgery. Now we're seeing it with a medication. But I think it's really important that we focus on, you know, what these medications are, the appropriate use of the medications, rather than just focusing on weight loss. I suppose it's interesting to hear the discussion about the tax revenue, because most of the conversation about these medications is more around the high costs of the medications and how inaccessible they are to the general public. So it's interesting to hear that turned on its head and see that there is a revenue to the country from the medications too.
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned about the willpower issue. So just to give you all my own personal experience of this, so I started on Mounjaro on the 1st of April. I was 18 stone. I'm now 12 stone 7. So that's 5 stone, 7 pounds gone. I had tried every other diet going. I've lost weight. I've gained weight. I've put back on the weight I lost and added more weight to it. And it's only in sort of the last year that I've heard doctors like yourself say that obesity is a disease, that this isn't a willpower issue, and that there's something in the brain that seems to, does it metabolize fat differently? The brain thinks it needs to maybe hold on to the weight.
Yes, we have this idea about the set point, the thermostat in our brain that regulates weight. And I suppose we are evolved as animals, as humans, to survive. And we're supposed to be living in a world where food is scarce. But now we live in a different environment, a food environment where we have ultra processed, calorie dense, readily available foods. And the caveman part of my brain revels in that, because now he no longer has to be the hunter gatherer. So if my weight increases, not because of lack of willpower motivation, but if it increases because of my genetic, my biology, my environment, my body is now trying to defend that higher weight. So 99.9% of people I meet in clinic have lost weight repeatedly because, do you know what? They're really intelligent. They know what to do. They're dedicated, motivated, and they can endure misery. And they have endured misery of every diet that is out there. But our biology fights against that. It tilts the pitch. So it changes hunger hormones, fullness hormones, metabolism. It changes the dopamine reward pathways, all of this in the subconscious brain at a level we can't control to encourage our weight back up to its previous level. And when we get back to our previous pre-diet weight, those mechanisms don't switch off. So we often end up at a higher weight. And then the thermostat in the brain resets. So it's like a one-way valve. So we see this weight cycling, constantly losing weight, gaining weight, because we're doing what we have been told to do. We're trying to eat less and move more. But that's a gross oversimplification. That's a bit like telling somebody with depression to cheer up. It just doesn't take account of how complicated this is. So, you know, I meet the most successful people ever who have, you know, been really, really amazing in academics, in sports, in professional, in relationships, and they're utterly frustrated that weight is not something they can control. But it's because they're using the skills that made them successful in life to try and regulate something that's biological. And that's where the frustration arises.
Sheena, isn't it so refreshing to hear a doctor, an expert say this? Because I'm sure you would have had patients come into you and say, I can't eat any less, move any more, hike any higher, and can't keep the weight off. And now to hear doctors say that this is a disease, it isn't willpower, it isn't put down the extra bag of crisps, that there's something else going on.
There really is. And actually, the association and correlation with depression as a result of obesity or vice versa, you know, is not to be underestimated. So, you know, Dr. Crotty spoke about the complexity of this disease, and it really is wide ranging. So people will obviously suffer with comorbidities associated with obesity, such as diabetes, potentially high blood pressure, cholesterol. They could be on multiple medications, overall trying to do their best and failing. And we have to remember the overall context. And when we look at kind of commercial determinants of health, there's two things going on here. So we have a market which is freely, you know, pumping ultra-processed, poorly labelled foods into the market. And we have fast food outlets popping up faster and quicker than ever before. And, you know, unfortunately, commercially, these organisations tend to take advantage of areas where there's worse, maybe health literacy and levels of deprivation. And, you know, people mightn't have the time to be able to cook. I think a lot of it is to do with lifestyle. Traditionally, you might have had one person at home preparing meals. That's just not a reality anymore. People are very busy, very burdened financially, and, you know, time poverty, all of it contributes. So the context is so, so important. And then you have the other side where you have commercially people selling weight loss solutions. And I'm not talking about these obesity medications. I'm talking about every organization that is selling a fad diet or a short-term fix. And all of these contribute to a roller coaster life course relationship with weight loss and with body image. And it's so incredibly damaging that by the time patients come in to us, say, for example, for these medications, they're just worn out. They're exhausted. They're upset. They've experienced a life of stigma and disappointment. And we really need to make sure that we have the wraparound services and care in place for these people. Because, you know, as Dr. Crotty highlighted, this is not just about a quick magic fix. These medications are part of a treatment plan. And, you know, we even see it on the licensing, you know, from the companies. These medications are to be used in addition with lifestyle and exercise advice. And I would personally feel quite strongly about potentially counselling or, you know, some sort of psychological support being included in that. And I think that's where we really need to target our resources, is supporting people in a more holistic journey.
Mick, Sheena mentioned stigma and shame there. I just don't know if you're ever going to get rid of it. I mean, I've had 35, 36 years of dealing with weight issues, certainly from teenage years on. But even recently, people asking me, how have you lost the weight? I haven't shared with them that I'm on one of these medications because there's a bit of shame involved in it. But also, I think people will think that I've somehow taken the easy option, or I've somehow cheated it, or I've done a quick fix.
Hmm. Yeah, weight bias and stigma are huge issues in society, in the media, in healthcare. You know, negative assumptions and stereotypes about people based on body size and shape, assumptions about their health, about their lifestyle, assumptions about their intelligence. We know in schools and universities, people living in a bigger body don't get the same results in exams. They don't get the same opportunities as far as employment and the jobs that are offered. We know, again, I suppose, from a healthcare point of view, healthcare professionals are in the past and perhaps at the moment, when people come in and they're living in a bigger body, there is a tendency to blame all and every issue on somebody's weight. If you just lose weight, that will get better. And I suppose that's why it can be a challenging conversation in general practice when somebody comes in to talk about weight, because people have had those negative experiences in the past. And we need to approach this in a non-judgmental way. We need to approach it in a chronic disease management way. We need to ask somebody's permission. Is it okay to discuss your weight? But equally then, I suppose GPs need to be armed with referral pathways, with resources, with time. At the moment, obesity care is not resourced in general practice in Ireland. So it's very, very difficult to treat somebody when you haven't got the time, you haven't got access to community dietitians, perhaps as much as you would want, and other services. But it's interesting, and you know, I'd love to hear about your experience, but when I meet somebody and discuss with them about obesity, people with obesity understand immediately because they have lived every second of that weight stigma and bias. They understand the biology of weight regulation because they've lost the weight and regained it over time. One of the amazing things is when you do treat somebody, whether it is with bariatric surgery or medications, when you treat them biologically, people all of a sudden will report that they feel different. I'm not thinking about food as much. I feel fuller, quicker, fuller for longer. And they realize how much of this is biological. We have in the past focused on this eyes on the road approach. And really for me, I suppose the lifestyle approach to this is changing. You know, we all, irrespective of our size, our health, we all need to be focusing on healthy eating. We all need to be focusing on physical activity and sleep and stress and alcohol and work-life balance. And that's equally important for health and for obesity care. So there is this kind of notion out there that if we put people on medication, it's a quick fix and they don't have to engage on nutrition and other things. The actual opposite is the case. It is even more important that people focus on nutrition to get their protein, to get their fiber. And people are not idiots. People are highly intelligent. They know this. And they know that their health and quality of life will be improved. But by regulating biology, we are removing one of the major barriers that people are living with. You know, people know what to do, but it's the implementation of that knowledge. So traditionally, this idea, we just need to educate people about nutrition. People know about nutrition, but if we treat their biology, they're better able to put into practice the knowledge that they have and focus on those things. So I think it's really interesting to see people's response to these medications.
Yeah, and you're dead right. People are acutely aware. Like, people would have said to me, oh, you've put on a bit of weight, as if you're not acutely aware of your own body. And what a lot of people on these drugs would say is that it turns off the food noise in your head. So it turns off the constant craving. And again, that's all to do with your brain. But we don't know, do we, what the long-term effects of this medication will be? Or do you take the view that we do know what the long-term effects of obesity will be?
I think we can look at this in two fronts. These medications are not new medications. We've had GLP-1 medications for over 20 years in the treatment of diabetes, and we've been using them for more than 10 years in the treatments of obesity. So they're not new medications. We have been using them, but we've been using them to treat the complications of obesity rather than the underlying cause. So we do have long-term studies and data and major randomized controlled trials looking at safety of these medications. And it is really important. These are medications. These are not supplements. These are not, you know, there are risks and there are benefits. And that's why the care needs to be individualized. You need to approach somebody, you know, what impact is excess weight having on that person's health? And for them, does that justify the risk perhaps of gastrointestinal upset, of, you know, reduction in muscle mass, of, you know, gallstones and complications of gallstones for that individual? These are medications people will need to take for the rest of their life. They're not a kickstart, a quick fix, a shortcut. These are long-term treatments, like a statin is for cholesterol or like an inhaler is for asthma. So people need to be aware of that. And they need to know, you know, how to approach lifestyle and how to approach nutrition while on these medications. It's interesting to your previous point of the stigma. We did a survey of patients on these medications, and we found that 75% of people are not talking about the fact that they're on these medications. 25% only their doctor and pharmacist knew. 50% of people will tell their partner or closest friend. 10% will tell their wider friend group, and 15% are screaming it from the rooftops because of the difference it has made to their life. But 75% of people are very secretive about this. And again, I would see parallels with things like mental health in the past, where we didn't discuss it because it was very stigmatized. Now our understanding of that has improved, but we need the same to happen for obesity.
Yeah, I agree. It's why I wanted to do this podcast today, because no one's talking about it. And I suspect there are plenty of people on it, but no one's mentioning it. I would also advise people too, if someone, you know, in the workplace or a friend group is losing weight, don't lead with, oh my God, are you on Ozempic or whatever? Just allow them and embrace them being a bit healthier. Sheena, one thing Mick said there, you know, it's not a quick fix and people could be on it long term and for life. The cost of it. So I'm paying €456 every month for this medication. Why is it so expensive?
Yeah. So this is a really difficult area that we're in at the moment. And obviously we had Ozempic, and that's much cheaper as a monthly price point. You're talking about €130 a month. So there's two situations here. You've got companies coming out with, say, new brands of medication and developing lines that they haven't, I suppose, worked on before. There's costs associated with that. Then you have the, I suppose, the varying degree of state support for access to these medications. So, for example, with Ozempic, we know that that is licensed and approved under state schemes to be provided for the treatment of diabetes only. So if people want to access that for weight loss, unfortunately, it's not covered under the drugs payment scheme or on the medical card. So there's complexity there. We know that in Ireland, when novel technologies or treatments come in, there is a very important process. And look, I'm someone who has been studying health economics for the last few months as a result of the master's I'm doing. And there is absolute necessity and value in robust and thorough investigation of, you know, cost and economic benefit to both the patient and the state. And healthcare resources are, of course, limited. But the delay in these reports is what's really frustrating to people like me who have patients who we can see this is creating inequity in care. And we can see that, you know, the fact that they're not covered now under state schemes is nearly underpinning the stigma. It's like, well, no, this isn't a real condition. We're not going to pay for it. And it's like, well, wait a minute. It is, as defined by the World Health Organization, a chronic complex disease. And why are we not providing care for that condition? But on the flip side, we have pharma companies who, you know, are producing these medications. And Ireland is a very small country. We need to remember that. So, like, there are other weight loss medications from the same kind of family, even, for example, in capsule form, semaglutide, which is the Ozempic active ingredient. And that hasn't been marketed yet in Ireland, even though it's approved. And the reason for that is that we're really insignificant as a market to these big global pharma companies. So when it comes to us, they just don't really care, you know? So the onus is on us to be, I suppose, more proactive. While supply is being established, there is limited supply, and we are an island off Europe. So we're the last in the pecking order for access, really, in my experience. So it's a combination of things, with pharma companies trying to maximize return on R&D or just marketing and branding that goes on in other countries, and the delivery of these medications and access to the market. Then we have delays from the pharmacoeconomic studies here in Ireland. And that's not because we're not amazing at doing them. We are, and we have amazing teams of health economists in both HICWA and the NCPE. But unfortunately, they're under-resourced. So we're not agile and quick enough at undertaking this kind of study. And ultimately, that results in patients suffering. Like yourself, like, that's a huge burden of money. And to be honest, when I'm in the pharmacy, that's the barrier. Like, that is the reason people aren't accessing healthcare. And we have some patients who are covered under what's known, you know, as a basically, I suppose, it's a very specific clause. The HSE will pay for one of the GLP-1s called Saxenda, and they will do it only if you have a BMI of over 30 and you have, say, pre-diabetes or other kind of comorbid associated diseases. So I think with time, and it's easy for me to say this now, but it's not easy for people living with obesity to hear. With time, these products will flood our market, and these products are life-changing. And they're so beneficial for the state, because when you think about the reduction in things like, you know, cardiovascular disease, even forms of cancer, the amount of savings and long-term care, and to be honest, the complications of obesity are coming at us at a time where our population is aging and growing, and we cannot sustain the levels of care that we need to. So inaction is not an option, but there is a bit of a time lag, I think, between easy access to these medications. And I would also kind of emphasize the supportive structures and networks that need to be there for patients, you know, such as access to dietitians, such as it could be like we have several patients who are inactive as a result of their obesity, but not by choice. So, you know, they could have chronic pain, they could have musculoskeletal disorders as a result of their obesity, which just makes them a bit more immobile, or they can't access surgery for a condition. So it's really complex, and there is a time lag, and the cost is so prohibitive.
Yeah.
Shane, one thing, maybe let people know that anyone who is being treated through prescription and supply in the pharmacy with receipts only for the licensed indications, so for Wegovy and for Mounjaro, they can actually claim 20% back tax relief on their Med1.
I should say it was my GP who put me on Mounjaro on the 1st of April. There's a whole other conversation to be had about people sourcing on the black market, which is obviously so, so dangerous. And Mick, I don't want this to become an ad, because obviously it's a conversation everyone needs to have with their GP. But if someone is listening to this, they may be interested in general in changing their approach to weight loss. What would the first step be for them? What's your advice to them?
The first thing I would like to do is shift away from the idea of weight loss. This is about health. So for an individual, does excess weight have an impact on their health, on their medical metabolic health, on their physical functional health, on their psychosocial health? So this is not about making everybody skinny. I tell every person I meet in clinic, I'm not going to make you skinny and I'm not going to make you happy, because changing somebody's weight doesn't make them happy. We may make them healthier, more functional, improve their quality of life and reduce the risk of health issues in the future. So I think, first of all, to consider, is weight having an impact on health? And if it is, with every person I meet, I talk about all the treatment options. I talk about lifestyle, nutrition, behavioral support. I talk about medication options, and I talk about surgery. And it's about finding the right treatment for the right person at the right time. Starting a conversation. So maybe, you know, if somebody feels they would like to address this issue, considering what they've done in the past and where would they like to start? You know, do they feel they'd like to, you know, start with nutrition? Maybe they would like to book an appointment with a dietitian. Would they like to, you know, talk about all the options with their GP? They would book a specific visit to talk to their GP about different options. You know, would they consider surgery? And again, a lot of this is advocating for ourselves as far as kind of treatment options. Once I think, you know, we bring up this conversation, we need to bear in mind this is for life. Obesity care is not just giving somebody a prescription. You know, that's not how we treat other chronic diseases. So people need the information, they need the knowledge. And then, you know, people need a proper assessment to discussion about treatment options, pros and cons, risks, benefits, and costs. And they need follow-up for the rest of their life, you know? So I think starting the conversation is really helpful, but this isn't a quick fix. But I think really we should be shifting the focus onto health. Once, you know, people have stabilized on the medication and their weight stops going down, the ongoing role of a treatment then is to maintain weight at the lower level. So that's why people need longer term treatment.
Okay, well, Mick and Sheena, thank you both so much for joining me to talk about this today. And thank you for allowing me to share my story as well. I really do appreciate it. And I'd love to hear from you, the News Talk Daily listeners, about your own experience with taking one of these treatments. You can send me an email. The address is newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. That's it for another edition. If you're up early tomorrow, join me at 6 on News Talk for Breakfast Briefing and on the Go Loud Player for another News Talk Daily. Until then, from me, Shane Beattie. Bye-bye.